Blog Talk Radio.
But there has never been literally two Americas. One America is beautiful for situation. Militant, this America is overflowing with the milk of prosperity and the honey
there
of opportunity.
When we heed
a call,
when the world must come together as one, there are people dying,
culture and education
for
their mind,
freedom and human dignity
for their spirit. And this American mission for people,
pretending day by day,
every day,
that the moment somewhere will soon make a change. We are God's great big family and the truth. You know love is all we need.
There's
a choice we're making. We're saving our own lives. It's true, we make a better day. You and me.
And this America, millions of
workers. Well, send them your heart. So they know that someone cares. And their lives will be stronger and free. As God has shown us, fire turning stone to bread, and so we all must lend a helping hand. We are the world, we are the children, we are the ones to make a brighter day, so let's start giving.
But if you just believe, there's no way we can fall.
Well, all that's real life, all that is dying, can only come when we stand together as one. We are the world. We are the children. We are the
We are the world.
We are the world.
America was given giving millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that America was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor that would make it possible to grow and develop, refused to give that economic floor to its black peasant, so to speak. This is why Frederick Douglass could say that emancipation for the Negro was freedom to hunger, freedom to the winds and rains of heaven, freedom without roofs to cover their heads. He went on to say that it was freedom without bread to eat, freedom without land to cultivate. It was freedom and famine at the same time. But it does not stop there. In 1875, the nation passed the Civil Rights Bill, refused to enforce it. 1964, the nation passed a weaker Civil Rights Bill. And even to this day, that bill has not been totally enforced in all of its dimensions. The nation heralded a new day of concern for the poor, for the poverty-stricken, for the disadvantaged, and brought into being a poverty bill. But at the same time, it put such little money into the program that it was hardly and still remains hardly a good skirmish against poverty. White politicians and suburbs talk eloquently against open housing, and in the same breath contend that they are not racist. Now all of this and all of these things tell us that America has been backlashing on the whole question of basic constitutional and God-given rights for Negroes and other disadvantaged groups for more than 300 years. So these conditions, persistence of widespread poverty, of slums, and of tragic conditions in schools and other areas of life, all of these things have brought about a great deal of despair and a great deal of desperation, a great deal of disappointment and even bitterness in the Negro community. Today, all of our cities confront huge problems. All of our cities are potentially powder kegs as a result of the continued existence of these conditions. Many in moments of anger, many in moments of deep bitterness, engage in riots. Let me say, as I've always said, I will always continue to say, that riots are socially destructive and self-defeating. I'm still convinced that non-violence is the most potent weapon available to oppress people in their struggle for freedom and justice. I feel that violence will only create more social problems than they will solve, that in a real sense it is impractical for the Negro to even think of mounting a violent revolution in the United States. So I will continue to condemn riots and continue to say to my brothers and sisters that this is not the way. Continue to affirm that there is another way. But at the same time, it is as necessary for me to be as vigorous in condemning the conditions which cause persons to feel that they must engage in riotous activities as it is for me to condemn riots. I think America must see that riots do not develop out of thin air. Certain conditions continue to exist in our society, which must be condemned as vigorously as we condemn riots. In the final analysis, a riot is the language of the unheard. What is it that America has failed to hear? It has failed to hear that the plight of the Negro poor has worsened over the last few years. that fail to hear that the promises of freedom and justice have not been met, that has failed to hear that large segments of white society are more concerned about tranquility and the status quo than about justice, equality, and humanity. So in a real sense, our nation, some of the riots are caused by our nation's winters of delay. As long as America postpones justice, we stand in the position of having these recurrences of violence and riots over and over again. Social justice and progress are the absolute guarantors of riot prevention. Now let me go on to say that if we are to deal with all of the problems that I've talked about, if we are to bring America to the point that we have one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, there are certain things that we must do. The job ahead must be massive and positive. We must develop massive action programs all over the United States of America in order to deal with the problems that I have mentioned. Now, in order to develop these massive action programs, we've got to get rid of one or two false notions that continue to exist in our society. One is the notion that only time can solve the problem of racial injustice. I'm sure you've heard this idea. It is the notion almost that is something in the very flow of time that will miraculously cure all evil. Now, I've heard this over and over again. There are those, and they're often sincere people, who say to Negroes and their allies in the white community that we should slow up and just be nice and patient and continue to pray, and in 100 or 200 years, the problem will work itself out, because only time can solve the problem. I think that is an answer to that myth. And it is that time is neutral. It can be used either constructively or destructively. And I'm absolutely convinced that the forces of ill will in our nation, the extreme righteous in our nation, have often used time much more effectively than the forces of goodwill. It may well be that we will have to repent in this generation, not merely for the vitriolic words of the bad people and the violent actions of the bad people, but for the appalling silence and indifference of the good people who sit around and say, wait on time.
That's Dr. Martin Luther King, Dr. King movement on this Monday the 1st. I want to say you were praying for the people in Kentucky. And many people that in floods and fires lost everything. God is still in control. I'm concerned about the man, police beat the man over in Oak Park, over in on 95th, beat him to a coma. And then the black lady got killed in her house because we got rogue police out here just shooting and they got no guard. So we got to deal with that. The Dr. King movement, along with PUSH and other organizations, NAACP, we have to still stand strong, stop the killing, save the babies. And we were talking about when Dr. King marched in Marquette Park, they wouldn't allow blacks to move in Marquette Park. And we marched for 31 days. I was one of the marchers, along with Reverend Dunlap, Reverend Hatcher, and Mama Annie, Mother Grady, many of them in Englewood and Lawndale, they marched, you know, for open houses over across Western, just back in the day. But I want to say to you tonight, God is still in the business of healing and blessing. Storms back to back, I prophesied this, so get ready for some storms and tornadoes back to back. Flood down south, and what's happening in California, Las Vegas of that. They got dust storms in Phoenix. In Las Vegas, they got floods and they need water because the Hoover Dam is already down. I want to bring things to you tonight where you might know what's happening. 2023, God bless you tonight. I see what you're saying. I want to tell you, the only way we're going to solve the racial problem, like Dr. King said, we have to come and change and be what we ought to be. Stop the killing, save the babies. This is Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Movement. We come on every Mondays, Tuesday, crossover with the ancestors, and on Wednesdays, Bible class, Thursday, Divine Word. And I want to tell you, there's so much evil that's going on. I was talking to some ladies in Hammond, Indiana this evening, and we had to really go to work to get some stuff done. There's a lot going on, and a lot is racial motivated, and some of it is evil motivated. The warlocks and the witches is moving quick, fast, and in a hurry. And I was telling a young man that I was talking to, and he said, Bishop, it seemed like that all things break loose because you got people that's in evil places. That's why I say always pray and stay anointed. And I listen every week. We're going to play Dr. King. One lady said, oh, you play that. That's what I'm playing. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who was a drum major for justice and who tried to bring us to the next level. But some of us wasn't ready to go. We weren't ready to go to the next level. We had some other agendas on our mind. And the poor people right now, we're going through a situation where people are starving. We have more money sent over to Ukraine and all of that. By the way, the president got the COVID over again. That let you know the COVID is airborne. And we're dealing with the market pops. And the market pops didn't come from Africa, as it come from Europe. And when you talk about the COVID, it come from Wuhan and China. Everybody slipping the buck. Don't nobody want to take the credit of what they done did and how they have so many people been murdered and killed. Nobody really want to take that situation. But I want you to get ready on this Monday the 1st. I'm going to read Psalms 41, Psalms 88, and Psalms 73. We're going into a new month. We're going into the month of August. I can hear the line roaring. After the flood, a lot's going on. You got to stay put. I'm praying for you and you tonight, wherever you might be. Stop the killing and save the babies. We got to ban the assault rifles. We got to stop killing each other over the weekend. You know, so much happened. Well, I want to tell you that every letter, every telephone call, God bless you. Thank you for going to thusseedabrahamyolatite.com. Go to my website, thusseedabrahamyolatite.com, and go to the homepage, and you can hit right under my picture if you want to send a donation or you want to plant a seed. If you got a need to plant a seed, that seed will grow quick, fast, and somebody's a bishop in a hurry. And you need something to be moving for you quick, fast, and in a hurry. Now, one thing I'm saying tonight, get ready. God is still opening up some doors and closing some doors. Somebody asked me, what's going on, Bishop? I got to tell you what's going on. God is in control. And if God in control, every door closed, open up. I'm praying for so many people have lost their life. So many. And, you know, so many people lost their life. And how they lost their life? Because so much going on. That's how they lost their life. And we got to be concerned about all that's going on and concerned about the hurt that's happening to our people. So you get ready for God to mass a blessing for you and get ready to open up that special door. Because there's a door coming and God is not going to fail. And God going to keep that door open up for you. He's going to keep you in perfect peace. So I want you to pray for you tonight. It seems like that in the spirit, this is the 8th month. And the kids getting ready to go back to school. In some places, they're already going back to school. I want you to get ready to know God is able to do anything, but there's no failure in God. So you get ready for a breakthrough for God to do something for you. And as God does something for you, he's going to deliver you to the next level. Somebody said, Bishop, I want to go to the next level. And the next level is able to reach out and touch somebody that needs some help. So we got a lot of people need some help. So you got to get and help them. The Dr. King movement is concerned about your health, your education, your job, your business. By being that way, we're concerned about doors opening up for you. And you said, well, Bishop, why there is a lot going on, but you got to stay focused and for God to do something special for you. So some people say, God will open up a door for you. Every letter, every telephone call, every spirit that coming will break a yoke for you. So get ready for a yoke to be broke. Get ready for a door to be opened up for you. And you say, well, why? Because you got to get ready to master some of the evil that has been sent out there in the spirit realm. And you got to be able to master some of that negativity been sent out there. Now, it's a lot of it been sent out there, but you got to be able to master that. And once you master that, you'll come and be in control of it. A lot of people don't know. It's a lot of evil that's going on. And you don't know why it's going on like that. It's going on like that because so much of negative energy. You know, in the spirit of Dr. King, in the spirit of Dr. King's speeches, he was telling us what we need to do as men and women, and telling us what doors need to be opened up and how we get a chance to do what we need to do and be able to stand in a way to fix stuff that's been messed up. So we got a lot to do in Mississippi, Arkansas, Louisiana. Black on black crime, people in high places trying to take over. So I'm telling you tonight, we have a long ways to go. But I believe we can get there if we stick together. I believe if we stick together, doors will open up. We stick together, God will give us what we need, and he'll break the yoke. Somebody said, well, Bishop, how are you going to break the yoke? God is in control of all this stuff. And you got to know that he's in control. And you got to know God will fix it. Where it won't nobody else fix it, God will open up that door for you. And that's closed, open up. I'm praying for you, Sister Sandra, Brother Walter, I'm praying for you. Every letter. So thank you, Joe. I see you grilling out there, Joe. I see you talking to the ancestor. I say. Keep yourself focused for God to bless you tonight. And as we get ready to go in, we got to do some marching in this month. We're marching Marquette Park, drumming what Dr. King did. We got to go to Oakland where they beat that boy heavy to death. And he wasn't black, he was a Iranian. And it's just that it's too much people not speaking about what's going on. And I want to tell you tonight, in the spirit of Dr. King, we've come so far. We can't stop. We got to continue opening up the door for our young school starting back. We don't need a lot of police in the schools beating kids, putting their feet on the kids' head. That's got to stop. So we got to be able to stand, open up doors. And this is one of Dr. King's famous sermons I want you to hear tonight.
But if not.
Now, this is Simon Dr. King said, if God don't be with me, I'm going to still stand. And I want to tell you and you tonight, God, and thank you, Sister Mary Hawkins. I want you to get ready for the movement. And some of you said, Bishop, how do I get involved? call me. I'll get you involved in the movement. Brother Al Sampson, I was over at your church Saturday, Reverend Al Sampson. We had farmers from Arkansas, some farmers from Louisiana, Mississippi, brought peas and corn and brought watermelons up to sell for people. Don't forget, with this year is a year of trying times. I prophesied that Sister Tanya Scott, that will be floods back to back. There will be hurricanes coming, and they're going to come back to back. They're going to hit Texas. They're going to hit the coast, the Gulf Coast. They're going to hit in Mobile, Alabama, down in Florida, and it's coming back to back. So we got to get ready, because as a global woman, men have to obey God. And what Dr. King said, you know, and he was saying the same thing that I'm saying.
But if not, there was a day when many of the Israelites found themselves in bondage in Babylon. There was a king of Babylon by the name of Nebuchadnezzar. You read about him a good deal in the book of Daniel, and it stands as an epic that will remain stenciled on the mental sheets of unfolding generations. Nebuchadnezzar was a mighty king. And when he ruled, he ruled. And when he issued an order, he meant business. And Nebuchadnezzar issued an order. He made a golden image, and his order was that everybody under the reign of his kingship had to bow before that golden image and worship it. Now, those of you who read the Bible remember that story. One day, Nebuchadnezzar called in the judges and the governors and the sheriffs, and they had a dedicatory service for this golden image. And then he said to them, I'm instructing you to see that everybody bows before this golden image. But there were three young men around there.
Yes. Yes, sir.
One's name was Shadrach. The other one's name was Meshach. And the other name was Abednego. And they answered, and I read it from the scripture, and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this manner. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Now I want you to notice first here that these young men practiced civil disobedience. Civil disobedience is the refusal to abide by an order of the government or of the state or even of the court that your conscience tells you is unjust, civil disobedience is based on a commitment to conscience. In other words, one who practices civil disobedience is obedient to what he considers a higher law. And then there comes a time when a moral man can obey a law which his conscience tells him is unjust. And I tell you this morning, my friends, that history has moved on. Great moments have often come forth because there were those individuals in every age and every generation who were willing to say, I will be obedient to a higher law. These men were saying, I must be disobedient to a king in order to be obedient to the king. And those people who so often criticize those of us who come to those moments when we must practice civil disobedience never remember that even right here in America, in order to get free from the oppression and the colonialism of the British Empire, our nation practiced civil disobedience. For what represented civil disobedience more than the Boston Tea Party? And never forget that everything that Hitler did in Germany was legal. It was legal to do everything that Hitler did to the Jews. It was a law in Germany that Hitler issued himself that it was wrong and illegal to aid and comfort a Jew in Hitler's Germany. But I tell you, if I had lived in Hitler's Germany with my attitude, I would have openly broken that law.
Make it plain.
I would have practiced civil disobedience. And so it is important to see that there are times when a man-made law is out of harmony with the moral law of the universe. There are times when human laws are out of harmony with eternal and divine laws. And when that happens, you have an obligation to break it. And I'm happy that in breaking it, I have some good company.
Yes.
I have Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I have Jesus and Socrates.
Make it plain.
And I have...
We have come so far, but we still got a long ways to go. Tonight, as we talk about Dr. King's speech to America, as we talk, Dr. King talked to us to grow
up
and to vote.
And we will fill our legislative halls with men of goodwill and send to the sacred halls of Congress.
Just about it. We got the vote. Us the ballot, Dr. King was saying, And he was saying that we have to go.
Mr. Chairman, distinguished platform associates, fellow Americans, 3 years ago, the Supreme Court of this nation rendered in simple, eloquent, and unequivocal language a decision which will long be stenciled on the mental sheets of succeeding generations. For all men of goodwill, this May 17th decision came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of human captivity. It came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of disinherited people throughout the world who had dared only to dream of freedom. Unfortunately, this noble and sublime decision has not gone without opposition. This opposition has often risen to ominous proportions. Many states have risen up in open defiance. The legislative halls of the South ring loud with such words as interposition and nullification. But even more, all types of conniving methods are still being used to prevent the Negroes from becoming registered voters. The denial of this sacred right is a tragic betrayal of the highest mandates of our democratic tradition. For our most urgent request to the President of the United States and every member of Congress is to give us the right to vote. Give us the ballot. And we will no longer have to worry the federal government about our basic rights. Give us the ballot. And we will no longer plead to the federal government for passage of an anti-lynching law. We will, by the power of our vote, write the law on the statute books of the South and bring an end to the dastardly acts of the hooded perpetrators of violence. Give us the ballot, and we will transform the salient misdeeds of bloodthirsty mobs into the calculated good deeds of orderly citizens. Give us the ballot, and we will fill our legislative halls with men of goodwill and send to the sacred halls of Congress men who will not sign a Southern manifesto because of their devotion to the manifesto of justice. Give us the ballot. And we will place judges on the benches of the South who will do justly and love mercy. And we will place at the head of the Southern states governors who have felt not only the pang of the human, but the glow of the divine. Give us the ballot. And we will quietly and nonviolently, without rancor or bitterness, implement the Supreme Court's decision of May 17, 1954. In this juncture of our nation's history, That is an urgent need for dedicated and courageous leadership. We are to solve the problem ahead and make racial justice a reality. This leadership must be fourfold. First, that is need for strong, aggressive leadership from the federal government. So far, only the judicial branch of the government has evinced this quality of leadership. If the executive and legislative branches of the government were as concerned about the protection of our citizenship rights as the federal courts have been, then the transition from a segregated to an integrated society would be infinitely smoother. But we so often look to Washington in vain for this concern. In the midst of the tragic breakdown of law and order, the executive branch of the government is all too silent and apathetic. In the midst of the desperate need for civil rights legislation, the legislative branch of the government is all too stagnant and hypocritical. This dearth of positive leadership from the federal government is not confined to one particular political party. Both political parties have betrayed the cause of justice. The Democrats have betrayed it by capitulating to the prejudices and undemocratic practices of the Southern Dixiecrats. The Republicans have betrayed it by capitulating to the blatant hypocrisy of right-wing reactionary Northerners. These men so often have a high blood pressure of word and an anemia of deed. In the midst of these prevailing conditions, we come to Washington today pleading with the President and members of Congress to provide a strong moral and courageous leadership for a situation that cannot permanently be evaded. We come humbly to say to the men in the forefront of our government that the civil rights issue is not an ephemeral, evanescent domestic issue that can be kicked about by reactionary guardians of the status quo. It is rather an eternal moral issue, which may well determine the destiny of our nation in the ideological struggle with communism. The hour is late. The clock of destiny is ticking out. We must act now before it is too late. A second area in which there is need for strong leadership is from the white northern liberals. That is a dire need today for liberalism which is truly liberal. What we are witnessing today in so many northern communities is a sort of quasi-liberalism which is based on the principle of looking sympathetically at all sides. It is a liberalism so bent on seeing all sides that it fails to become committed to either side. It is a liberalism that is so objectively analytical that it is not subjectively committed. It is a liberalism which is neither hot nor cold, but lukewarm. We call for liberalism from the North which will be thoroughly committed to the ideal of racial justice and will not be deterred by the propaganda and subtle words of those who say, slow up for a while, you're pushing too fast. A third source that we must look to for strong leadership from the moderates of the white South. It is unfortunate that at this time the leadership of the white South stems from the closed-minded reactionaries. These persons gain prominence and power by the dissemination of false ideas, by deliberately appealing to the deepest hate responses within the human mind. It is my firm belief that this closed-minded, reactionary, recalcitrant group constitutes a numerical minority. There are in the white South more open-minded moderates than appears on the circuit. These persons are silent today because of fear of social, political, and economic reprisal. God grant that the white moderates of the South will rise up courageously without fear and take up the leadership in this tense period of transition. I cannot close without stressing the urgent need for strong, courageous, and intelligent leadership from the Negro community. We need a leadership that is calm and yet positive. This is no day for the rabble-rouser, whether he be Negro or white. We must realize that we are grappling with the most weighty social problem of the nation. In grappling with such a complex problem, there is no place for misguided emotionalism. We must work passionately and unrelentingly for the goal of freedom. But we must be sure that our hands are clean in the struggle. We must never struggle with falsehood